hello and welcome to the Midweek F1 podcast with me, Jenny Gow, standing in for Nicola and our Las Vegas Grand Prix episode. And quite rightly so, I'm joined by F1 Siegfried to my Roy. The Elvis of F1 commentator is Ben Edwards.
Thank you so much. Well, what happened at Las Vegas, I'm all shook up.
Oh, I love it. Well done. Round of applause. I didn't know where that was going, but I like it a lot. I thought you said what happens in Vegas will stay in Vegas, which means this show will be weirdly mute. Wouldn't be much good. But if you're watching us, please click on the bell and subscribe to us. And it really does help spread the word about the Midweek F1 show. And do it to as many friends as you can. Spread that word. And if you're listening, then click the follow button so you don't miss a thing, even little specials that we put out midweek. And you can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok. So many ways. Just search Midweek F1.
Well, we are now looking forward to talking about what happened in Las Vegas. Oh, my goodness. There was so much going on. An incredible qualifying in difficult conditions. The race, it was tough. There was some key overtaking going on there. We couldn't always predict what was going to happen all the way to the end. And then McLaren, both cars disqualified. I mean, wow, what, it was bizarre. So we've got plenty to talk about. And then, of course, we've got to look ahead because this title is going to go to the next two races and Qatar the next one.
I know, it could be decided in Qatar. It could be decided in Abu Dhabi. We're on the edge of our seat, even though I'm not on the actual edge of my seat. Yes, so much to cover. Once again, we simply must have our special guest from the get-go. He's back, YouTuber, Talking Bull podcaster, and TalkSport go-to F1 man. It is Tomo McCloskey.
Thank you for having me. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Jenny. I promise to bring less bias than Nicola as a fellow Talking Bull representative. So, yes, let's talk all about it because what a interesting result. Grand Prix wasn't the didn't set the world alight, but the disqualification gave us plenty to talk about.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Tomo. Thanks for coming along. And I will get you into our We Need to Talk About feature, very much a part of this podcast. And this week it's going to be about the sort of drivers like Kimi Antonelli, Ollie Bearman, Gabriele Portoveto, who have done a great job from Formula 2 coming into Formula 1. So we need to talk about who's doing well in Formula 2 right now, who might come into Formula 1 in the future. So that's something we're going to talk about.
Absolutely.
Then our very own Midweek F1 Predictions Championship of the World. Who chose wisely in predicting the top three in Vegas? Who chose wisely and then had their spirits crushed with disqualification? We'll find out as we pick a winner for the Qatar Grand Prix coming up this weekend.
Absolutely. Looking into what happens at Qatar, it's been a good track for McLaren in the past, for both Lando Norris, but also for Oscar Piastri, interestingly. But it also has been good for Max Verstappen. So with the three of them potentially all fighting for the championship, there's a lot to look forward to, and we'll be talking about that.
Yeah, Las Vegas gave us pretty much everything. A damp track for qualifying. I thought qualifying was really exciting. Yellow flags, all sorts of chaos. The grid was a bit mixed up. We had Oscar Piastri back in fifth place. Then at the start, Lando tried to be so aggressive off the start line. He was in pole. He took a massive risk in cutting across through Max Verstappen, went wide, left the door open for Max to go through, for George Russell to go through. And I thought that was a bit of a problem for him. Then we had bowling at the back with Lawson clipping things, Bortoleto clipping people. Then there was Hamilton, Leclerc. They were struggling, but overtaking through a lot of the pack. Sainz up to third at one point, and that Williams. I know this is going to work for you. And despite a penalty, there was another standout drive for Kimi Antonelli. He did an amazing job of making his Mercedes as wide as he could and holding on. And in the end, despite that 5-second penalty, he managed to get up to third. An amazing performance from him, I thought.
Yeah, it was really good. And just, yeah, your thoughts on that, very good. I loved qualifying, as I mentioned, because just watching the onboards on that, it's a very slippery surface. It was fascinating to see. And, of course, they had to keep on going round and round. And you needed to be there on the last lap of the last Q3 to try and set a pace. Oscar Piastri was a bit unlucky. Yeah, there were yellow flags. That affected some of the drivers as well. And to see Lewis Hamilton last on the grid, that was painful as well.
Yeah, he didn't get his last lap in, did he? He did pass the line in time, but he thought he didn't.
Exactly.
And that hit him hard as well. I love that so many drivers post qualifying, you know, a lot of them will, maybe it was a bit too, you know, bit too slippery with the, you know, the cold temperatures and all that. The one driver who was like, I enjoyed that more than I thought, Fernando Alonso. Of course, of course, Fernando loved it. Brilliant, love him.
Yeah, there was a lot of excitement, I thought, and drama through the weekend. And I didn't think the race was actually that good. Mm. But the whole weekend, as we get so used to with Vegas, it's only the third year, but it's an event.
It is. And the disqualification after the race, I mean, that has had such an effect on us all, because now suddenly we're in a really close spot going into those last two races. And yes, Lando's still got a good chance, but it's certainly not over yet, you know. So, yeah, interesting weekend, no doubt about it. Las Vegas is always a bit bonkers. But and it was interesting. I was working on F1 Academy, so the young girls who are rookies are moving their way up. Well done to Dorian Pan, by the way, the French champion in F1 Academy. She did a great job all season long. Let's hope her career builds up from there.
Yes, we've seen a lot of people come through that championship, the feeder series, and then it kind of full stops.
Yeah.
So yes, fingers crossed for Pin that she goes on and does a really good job. Mercedes backing her all the way.
Exactly.
So you'd have
good
to hope. Yeah, exactly. Okay, as always, producer Jim has chosen some of this weekend's storylines for us to talk about. Producer Jim, what have you picked out?
Championship focus one. Unbelievably, Max is now tied on points with Piastri. They are both 24 points behind Lando with 58 points still on the table. Can Max do this? Discuss.
I'm so glad I'm sitting here and not Nicola, because we know what her answer would be. So, Ben, tell me, what's your answer?
It's, you know, it's really exciting going forwards. And Lando is still in a good position. Yes, we've got three races, two events, but three races, because we've got a sprint race at Qatar as well as the main race, and then, of course, the final race in Abu Dhabi. It is a decisive issue, there's no doubt. I mean, I'm really excited because it is unpredictable. But Lando's been doing a great job recently.
He has.
Oscar Piastri's not so great, but Max is always, always at the top level. So it's fascinating. What do you think?
It is absolutely in Lando's hands. Even if Lando finishes second in the remaining Sprint and 2 Grand Prix, he will still win the title regardless of what anyone... Even if he finishes third in the last Sprint and the last 2 Grand Prix... Even if Max and Oscar maximise points, they'll still finish 2 points behind him.
Although I was looking at that, if Max manages to win the race, and Lando's only third in all of the races, I think they would end up pretty much on the same points.
I think it would be 2 points, right? Because it would be a 7 point swing on both Grand Prix, which is 14.
Yeah,
and then it's a 24 point gap, right? So it would be. Like, they need to rely on things not going right for Lando, and I completely agree. I think Lando's driving, he's holding up his end of the bargain. And with the McLaren, you know, retirement in, you know, Zandvoort earlier this year, but also the technical failure, like this time in terms of not, you know, the car not being legal, essentially, McLaren need to hold up their end of the bargain. I think Lando is driving with a confidence and an assuredness that I've not seen from him yet. Actually, he's blocking out the noise, and it seems to be... The talent's always been there. It's been the mistakes and the execution, because he hasn't really been slower than Oscar this year. He's just made more mistakes for most of the season, but he's switched it on at the right time now.
He really has. And looking at him, the mental space that he is holding in that paddock now, it's a very different space than the one he started the year with. And I think when he lost the lead of the championship back at the beginning of the season, I think it was about round four, at that point, you could see him crumbling, falling away, not believing in himself, not believing his ability to be able to drive the car. And all of a sudden, after Baku, I think, he's really found his feet, he's found his mojo again. And watching him in that car, it is a thing of beauty. And I think we underestimate how much you have to bring to a race weekend and how much it takes out of you. Look at Nico Rosberg. Won the championship, quit.
Did, yeah.
That's how much you have to leave on the line with F1, and it's often underestimated how much a driver has to put into it.
Yeah, no, Orlando's doing a great job, so we shall see.
Four poles in a row. It's very, very impressive. He's won that pace. It's top tier right now.
Yeah. Producer Jim.
Championship focus two. Is Oscar Piastri the big winner from the McLaren disqualification? The championship gap is as you were before Vegas, and could Qatar suit him more? Discuss.
Well, he did pass Norris on a sprint race last year on the last lap, pretty much. But Lando is good at Qatar as well. He was a bit unlucky. He got a penalty in the race last year. He was running second, but he was done for ignoring yellow flags, and that dropped him down. But he set a very good fastest lap. So they're both actually very good around the track, and the McLaren car obviously is good there. So for Max to get the Red Bull, although he's been twice a winner there, so we'll just have to see of the main races, he's done very well. So it could be a very close battle between all three, I think.
I think a lot is made of Oscar in Qatar because that's where he got that sprint win in 2023. And he out-qualified Lando that race, and they were on mediums, and they fell back and then came back through. And he won. Lando was third, I think, that time out. But like you say, last year, yes, Oscar won the sprint, but Lando basically gifted that to him in returning a favour, right?
That's true.
And in both qualifying sessions last year, sprint quali and normal quali, Lando out-qualified Oscar. So it is a better track for Oscar. However, I would still suggest that Lando is going to be quick around there. And it's not like Oscar's massively quicker than Lando around Qatar.
And you have to take in current form as well.
100%.
Oscar has just lost something. What it is, no one can quite put a finger on outside of McLaren. I'm sure within McLaren they might know more than of what's going on. Well, they will do. But for us, from outside, for someone that was so assured, that was driving in a way that was so Max Verstappen-like, it almost felt like he'd taken his qualities and was just going to just power on to win the world title. He led for 15 rounds.
No, it was very impressive.
And all of a sudden, it's not like he's forgotten how to drive, but he isn't driving to the standard he was. And I feel that's really confusing, firstly, when the car is still able to do what it can. But he's let Max and Lando get into his headspace.
I do wonder if if the car was developed a bit, which you always need to develop a car as you go through a year. Lando seemed to struggle a little bit with the feeling of the car in the early part of the year. Oscar seemed to be absolutely into it. And now it feels the other way around. It feels like Lando feels utterly at home in the car, and it feels like Oscar is not quite so comfortable with it. I don't know if that's to do with how they developed it. Of course, they got excluded for this bumping onto the ground effectively too much over the race in Las Vegas. But I think Oscar still has that potential in him. But as you say, I think Lando's in a great, great place at the moment.
I think there's clearly two things happening here. I think Lando is finding form, absolutely, and executing. At the same time, for the first, 15 of 16 rounds this year, Oscar was top three in qualifying every single time, only a P4 in Miami. In the last six weekends, eight qualifying sessions, his average is over P5. Yeah. So he's not only losing out to Lando, he's losing out to Max, to George, to Charles sometimes, to Kimi sometimes as well.
Yeah.
And it's such a sudden drop, and we don't have the answers.
No,
I think going into Qatar, a circuit that we know he gets on with, McLaren gets on well with, you should be able to get a real gauge of, okay, well, what's happened? Is he still up there with Lando? And it should be dry. It should be easy for them to be good there. And if it's not a 1-2, then something has happened and it's gone away from him more than we maybe thought. I don't know. It's hard to see. Producer Jim, help us out.
Championship Focus 3. Lando still leads the championship by 24 points despite the disqualification. Who should he be worried about more, Max or Oscar? Discuss.
It's a good question.
Obviously Max, surely.
I think Max too at this stage, probably. I mean, the way that Max has been driving again, and the way that Red Bull, to be fair, they have developed that car well, and it suits him. It's suiting him well. I think you're right. I think Max is on a really good form at the moment. Whether he can snatch it away, we will see. What do you think?
Wouldn't it be the most ridiculous comeback of all time?
I know.
104 points down at Zandvoort, and suddenly we're talking about 24 points. He's tied with Piastri, and as you say, you can just feel the threat like no one else. And I'd really be interested in, if you cast your mind back through all of F1, has there ever been a threat like Max Verstappen? Because he is the last person you would want to be on your back chasing you down.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I mean, we've seen some stars come through, but Max, he's on such great form at the moment. And the way, I mean, the way he dealt with both the rain, the wet in qualifying, even though Lando did a fantastic lap, but it was impressive what Max was doing as well, getting onto that front row, and then that start in Las Vegas. Yes, Lando went for it a bit too much and ran wide, but the way Max just deals with it so efficiently and got past him, that was it. You know, race done, effectively, even though he was under pressure from George briefly. Yeah, fantastic.
And it might be a different story if Lando and Oscar had championships, you know, to their names, but they don't. This is exactly. Their first rodeo, and Max has four. And he's been in this sport since 2016 and been putting in unbelievable performances since 2016. So, yes, I think that he will absolutely, like, he's got to be on Lando's mind, surely.
Okay.
Do you think a win?
I mean, that's...
Like the championship?
No, I don't, because I think you're asking for a lot to go wrong for Lando, and I don't think that much will go wrong. It'll be fine.
Good point. Well, let's see what Jim's got. What other question you got for you?
Kimi Antonelli puts in another impressive drive despite the five-second penalty to protect his teammate with car issues. Despite a second and third, was this the weekend that could have been for Mercedes?
You thought it was going to be Mercedes, didn't you? Because that's what you predicted.
Here he is.
You're asking us.
That's why he's asking that question.
Yeah, exactly. To be fair, Kimi Antonelli did a brilliant job, didn't he? That early pit stop and then running those tyres for so long and having to defend for so long. I was impressed.
Yeah, he was very impressive. Starting on those softs, I thought Mercedes had already signed him up to a two-stop. I was like, oh, that's a one. And the race going into the weekend could have been a one or two stop. We didn't quite know how it's going to work out. Temperatures are either a factor in that. And the data, there's just a lack of data to go in there and think, this is definitely one, this is definitely two stop. So I quite like not knowing. But I think Mercedes took a gamble. They've obviously changed the car, improved it from last year. So it wasn't going to be a total walkover. And I think they locked out with McLaren getting kicked out. But I was just so impressed with Antonelli. He's obviously developed through the year and he's in a good place now.
Yeah, I mean, he had such a difficult period. That European leg was so tough for him. But he's bounced back. He's had those peaks, that Miami sprint pole. You know, there's been so many moments, as much as good moments, bad moments. But in a rookie season, you're going to take, like, Toto, I think, very much accepts that. And it kind of reminded me of what Norris in Hungary, when he went with a one stop, everyone else went with a two stop, and it ended up being the right call. You look at George, he was, well, his tyres were graining trying to catch Max. And he kind of ran into a bit of blistering, which then meant he had to fall back and, you know, did what he did. But yeah, just a shame Kimi didn't get to celebrate on the podium.
That's true. Because he gets that third.
Got it for him for that.
But only after the McLaren's have been disqualified. Yeah, so he didn't get to stand up there. But
it's a shame.
He looked very happy anyway, didn't he? I mean, he was pleased with what he'd done, Kimi Antonelli. And, you know, it's interesting what you're saying, because that bit in Europe where he went through a bit of a bad patch, even Toto Wolff seemed a bit under pressure from some people. Have you got the right person here? Well, I think, you know, what Kimi's done in this latter part of the season certainly confirms that he's in the right place. And going into next year and different cars, I think he's going to be right up there.
And you made an interesting point about why he might have lost form through that European season area.
Because he went on record and kind of said that a lot of the European venues where he's raced at before in junior formulas, you know, he would go to those venues with a lot of preconceptions, a lot of pre-ideas of what was required from those circuits. Whereas when it's a fresh, and it's no surprise, right, in that European leg, the one race where he smashed it was Canada, which wasn't in Europe, and it's in the middle of the European leg, and he got the podium because he went with a fresh kind of perspective. And this is all part of the learning process for Kimi, isn't it?
Yeah, that is very natural. I totally understand, you know, when he's been doing sort of lots of Formula 2 races around certain tracks, he's got an instinct of what to do, but it's a Formula 1 car, it's different. And as you say, when he's going onto a fresh track, he's just got to absorb how the F1 car feels, and he does a great job. So yeah, no, really interesting.
Producer Jim.
Carlos Sainz puts in one of the best qualifying laps of his career to line up third. Has his fifth place finish cemented Williams as best of the rest in the constructors? Discuss.
Can I just say, I think driver of the day, the weekend, P3 in qualifying and what, P5, P7 on track, but obviously the double disqualification, P5. The perfect weekend from Carlos Sainz after what has been a very difficult up and down season.
Yeah.
And there were concerns that, oh, Alex can't really do this constructors thing on his own with Carlos struggling so much earlier on in the year. But Alex is my guy, right? Like, he's been struggling as of late. It's not been like he's had a lot, I think pointless weekends in a row now for Alex Albon. So it's just kind of funny. Both Williams can't have a good weekend at the same time.
Yeah.
It's always one or the other. It's never both. It's so annoying.
Consistency is key to being inconsistent.
It is.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. He's done a great job, there's no doubt. And Williams, it's great to see them delivering. And as you say, they're not the top teams, but they're ahead of the rest of the teams. And I think they will hold on to that position now because they have been consistent. Carlos has really got back on top. Alex is very talented as well, as we know. As you say, he's gone through a bit of a bad patch, but that has happened sometimes. But he may well deliver some good points in the remaining two events anyway, so we'll see.
Yeah, 31 points is their advantage. A couple of last races, I thought, oh, they might lose it. But actually, if they keep performing, I think that performance from Sainz has really helped them probably stay there and level that at fifth.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be a relief for all of the team.
I've got also for Alex, he had no radio during the race and then came in, he wanted the front wing changed and the team didn't change the wing. And he was pointing at the front wing, trying to tell him, and they didn't bring it. So he had to go, and that's why he came in again as well. So I do think operationally, Williams, that is definitely a weakness. I feel consistently throughout the year, there's been issues with execution, whether it's qualifying execution on Carlos's side, whether it's the car breaking down, whatever. So they're not the complete package, but I think James Vowles is remember where that team was in 2019?
Yeah. No, they've built it up, and it does take time.
They barely made preseason testing in 2019, and here they are. I think they could be in a really good place next year.
Well, I hope so for your sake. Producer Jim?
Ferrari focus, another mixed weekend for Ferrari after a public dressing down of the drivers from Ferrari chairman John Elkmann. Terrible qualifying, solid race. How do you solve a problem like Ferrari in 2025? Discuss.
The age-old question. Been asking this since 2007.
Yeah, a bit of a challenge indeed. Yes, indeed for Ferrari. I mean, it was interesting hearing from Charles Leclerc, wasn't it? Because he was really pleased with the way he'd driven. He felt he could not have done any more than he did. And yet there was some frustration that he couldn't make more ground with the way the car is. So that was interesting.
Yeah, he was quite kind of critical, saying, this wet weather execution has been a problem since he joined the team. Mm.
Yeah.
He's not putting it. And I think, Charles is 28 now. He's in the prime of his career. And this Ferrari dream, we all want it to come true, right? We're all Ferrari fans deep down. Of course we are. And I'd love to see him win in red, but. Last time I was on here, I was like, maybe he needs to go to Mercedes. Maybe he needs to think about options elsewhere next year, see the lie of the land. Because, are any of us going to predict Ferrari to be top of the tree next year in 26?
It's very hard to know for next year when we're under all these new rules. Yeah. But Ferrari's always a challenge, isn't it, Jenny? I mean, we've seen Ferrari over the years. The political aspect of Ferrari is always quite tricky. And then with John Elkann making those comments about the drivers just recently, there's always some painful moments with Ferrari, even though it's an amazing team.
And I've watched the two Ferrari drivers throughout the season. I've spoken to them both. I've been in the pen when they've come back from the highs and lows of a season. And I've never seen them both look so defeated.
Really?
And that's what surprises me by Elkann's remarks in the press. He spoke to the drivers before he went to the press. Why would you say to your drivers, by the way, I'm just about to roast you in front of the media and then go out and roast them?
Yeah.
It seems to me a very psychologically, potentially disastrous route to take when you're dealing with the likes of Charles and Lewis, one of the most successful and biggest brands in F1, to go out there and just publicly give them a dressing down. Mm. What are you trying to achieve? Mm. What is the point? And surely you have to look at the bigger picture, which is Ferrari keep on messing up. Mm. And do any of us really truly believe 26 will be different?
It's just unpredictable. I think that's totally unpredictable because we just don't know. If Fred Vasseur is a good team manager.
Absolutely.
It depends how he's helped to organise them to get into next year. For so many teams this year, you have to cut off quite early on to focus on next year. Ferrari didn't get it right this year from an early stage, really. And Lewis has struggled with this car. It just hasn't suited Lewis's driving style, you can tell, can't you?
And the brakes, the brakes don't seem to work for him. But you know what? Even outside of the technical elements, you've got two of the drivers who wear their hearts on their sleeves more than any other. Yeah. I think you would put Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton top of that pile.
Yeah.
So of course they're going to speak their mind. Like, what do you expect? And that's what you want. That's what the fans want to hear. And let's be honest. Let's be real. Like Ferrari, given the resource at that team, have massively underperformed for way too long now. And 26, you say it's an opportunity. Of course, it's an opportunity for everyone. But I'd love to. I mean, I predicted Charles Leclerc to win the title this year. And
How's that going for you?
I've had better predictions, Jenny. I've had worse predictions, believe it or not, as well. So
really?
Yeah, somehow. I honestly, Ferrari, it's a merry-go-round. I feel sorry for the Tifosi. I really do.
Yeah, absolutely.
No one wants to be a Tifosi at the moment. Producer Jim.
Extra breaking news story. Captain Christian Horner to Aston Martin. True or false? Discuss.
Well, it's up in the air, isn't it? That is an interesting one, that potentially Christian Horner will be back, having gone from Red Bull. Whether it will actually happen, we don't know yet, do we?
No.
Well, BBC reporting, aren't they, that Andy Cowell and Adrian Newey, there's been some kind of disagreements going on there. And we know Lawrence Stroll loves a big high-profile signing. He signed Vettel to replace, who had had a terrible 2020, to sign Perez, who had an amazing 2020. And, you know, I just don't get it. It's like the Galacticos approach, it feels like. You're just buying high-profile names left, right and centre and trying to mesh them together. And I don't think that's how you build a cohesive team, in my opinion, anyway.
I think working for Lawrence Stroll is a very hard thing to do. He's a hard boss. He's been extremely successful wherever he's gone before he's come to F1. And he is assembling this top line, top flight group of people to work with him. And I sat down with Andy Hill, had a wonderful interview with him. He talked about where he started and how his career has developed. And it felt like he was in the right place. But I did have that question mark of, is he a big enough name for the Strolls?
Oh.
And I just wonder if now it's getting to the end of this season, they haven't had, or they can say they haven't had the success they wanted. Are they just going for someone who's a bigger name? It might not be Horner. Horner is the obvious choice to look at. Can you see Horner and Newey working together again?
Well, I don't think it's impossible. Even though Newey left Red Bull, it's not impossible, because although there may have been some conflicts, I don't know, they have, as BBC pointed out, they have been seen together since, at least once at an event. And obviously what we do know is whatever their relationship is, they can work together well, you know, in the results that they have delivered over the years, very, very impressive.
And I think, you know, at Red Bull, Christian kind of ran that show. You know, Dietrich allowed him to, you know, build this team, and there was very little kind of intervention from above. Now you've got Newey's got skin in Aston Martin, and obviously then you've got Lawrence as the overlord of the team. So how does Christian, does that work for him as
yes,
well?
I
don't know if that works
no,
for him either.
I agree, that is a good question.
Would he get more autonomy maybe at an Alpine or even a fresh 12th team?
Yeah.
There's been talks about that as well, where he could actually, you know, build that up in the same, he wouldn't be able to build it up in the same way that he did Red Bull Racing, that's for sure.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Good point.
But it is interesting that you know, everyone's clinging on to this when and where will Christian return. It's not a matter of if, it's just a when, I think, now. But yeah, I can't see him working for Strolls so easily, because he does like to be in control.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's the right choice for him. Because it's mad to think that Christian started as team principal at Rebel Racing at 31. He was 1 year younger than me when he started as team principal. Like, I mean, it's just, no.
So is that your next job?
Well, if you are interested, I'll...
Down that camera there. Perfect. Okay, let's move on. Thank you, Jim. Social media roundup. So if you've been looking at social media, you cannot have avoided the story of Valtteri Bottas taking on the role of a ceremonial head when it came to marrying a couple in Vegas. I found it so sweet. And maybe 4 years ago, you'd have thought, no, don't be silly, an F1 driver stepping up to take the role of a vicar of F1, vicar of Vegas. No, surely not, but I mean, rip up the script. Anything's possible now. Are you up for it? Do you want to renew your vows in Vegas?
Well, it does sound interesting.
I saw if I'd have put any driver on doing that, it wouldn't have been. It would have been Ricciardo. Absolutely, is the guy I would have thought. But this new version of Valtteri Bottas 2.0, whatever he wants to call himself, is amazing. I love him. Great content.
Yeah.
No calendar this year, but he's signing people up, marrying them away. So good for him.
I absolutely love it. And I love Bottas as well. I can't wait for him to come back to F1. And I think what he's done with his own brand this year, this being another point to prove that it was just a masterclass of PR. Mm. When you're not in a seat, how do you spin it to make sure you're still the conversation and lining yourself up for when a seat does come through? And I think he has just nailed it. Ah, excellent.
Excellent. Good stuff. Okay, well, it's time for us to get into the We Need to Talk About section. And very much this week is about Formula 2 drivers coming up and trying to get into Formula 1. And we've seen some of the XF2 drivers doing a great job. We've had a lot of rookies in the season this year. They've been impressing us. We've been talking about Kimi Antonelli earlier on, for example, and several of the others as well. But the current Formula 2 championship is obviously still going on. They've had a big gap. They didn't get a race. The last race was towards the end of September. Mm. And now they've got two more events to go as we get to the end of November into December. So big, big gap. And we've got a bunch of drivers that are all still pretty close, actually, at the moment. Leo Fonaroli is on 188 points. Jack Crawford on 169 points. So it's a 19-point difference. Then we've got Luke Browning in third place. But we've got other drivers in there as well, which potentially could be coming up to Formula One, particularly in the Red Bull world, do we think?
Mm. Well, I think it's Arvid Lindblad, of course, is the driver most connected.
Yes.
And
because there's a connection with the team already.
Exactly. His pre-existing Red Bull, his seat for next year at Campos is going to Nikola Solov. So we know he's not going to be at the same team in F2 next year, which implies that either he's at another team in F2 next year, or he's in an F1 seat, or maybe neither on the sidelines doing loads of FP1s. Maybe that's the route Red Bull choose to go down. Because, of course, now that Laurent Mekies is in the job, maybe they'll approach the juniors a bit differently. Yeah. I don't know. Because obviously that's his forte. That's what
I agree. Yeah, absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And of course, a lot of what this is about who's going to be driving at Racing Bulls, isn't it? Because we're pretty sure that Hadjar's going to get the seat alongside Max Verstappen at Racing Bull. But at the Racing Bulls, we're still a bit unsure about what's going to happen there. What do you think, Jenny?
Yeah, it's definitely still up in the air for us. They might have signed deals already. When drivers lose their seats, you can normally see the drop-off. Mm. And if you look at Tsunoda, the drop-off is there, it's clear. So I probably would expect him to have already been told what's happening next year, and he won't be with Red Bull. As you say, Hadjar is the obvious choice. I didn't really know much about him at the start of the season, I have to admit. I'd heard him a little bit, but to have come into that seat fairly late call and impress as much as he has, I'm not surprised that they're looking at him and going, right, let's elevate him. I think...
Is Liam Lawson safe?
That's what I'm thinking. Mm. He's done just about enough in the last five races. I think he's possibly secured that seat for next year. And I think it's unlikely that they'd want two new drivers in that seat when they want a little consistency with the new regs and rules.
I agree.
So I think one rookie is fine, absolutely. But two rookies in a year where you've got totally different car, how it's handling, the tyres, they're going to have so many different rules. Mm. I think one steady Eddie is good, and that steady Eddie might be Liam. Mm. What do you think?
That's a good point.
I think, you know, over the course of the whole year, Liam's averaged about a tenth and a half behind Hadjar in qualifying.
Just off the top of your head.
Which
love that.
I keep these stats up there. I keep them tracked over the course of the year. However, it has actually come down over recent, I'd say in this last third of the season, they've been pretty equal in terms of, and of course, in he did a great job in qualifying in Vegas. He was sixth, I think he was, in the rain, always been good in the rain. So I think Liam deserves, you know, he was so hard done by only getting two races. I still think that was a crazy decision to pull him after two, to be honest. But like, he's shown enough, I think, that, and I agree, I think having, you know, they're sixth, it's not like they're right in the back either. They're probably going to finish P6 in the constructors. And then it's a case of, obviously, you've got Lindblad. There's maybe another current F2 driver who's been very much linked that I'm sure we'll talk about shortly, who isn't part of the program officially yet, but maybe will be soon. So we'll see if that maybe gets into the conversation.
So who are you talking about there?
I'm talking about a certain Irishman by the name of Alex Dunn. Yeah,
so Alex, you don't think the Dunn deal is done? I just want to go.
You
done,
prepared
really
that
done.
Beforehand, didn't you, Jenny? 100%. Well, no, because obviously he was part of McLaren, and then around Singapore weekend, it was announced he'd be leaving. And there's been a lot of rumours linking him to Red Bull, and then it kind of went a bit quiet, and we've not really heard. And like you say, Ben, because of the break, we've not seen him. There's been no interviews since he left McLaren.
Yeah,
so we don't know.
It's interesting. I mean, the Invicta team have done a great job in Formula 2 because Bortoletto won the championship with them last year. And Leo Fornaroli, who's leading the championship at the moment, Italian. And we're lacking Italians in Formula 1. He's not actually seems to be connected with any of the F1 teams yet, Leo. But if he's already got this championship lead, if he goes on to win the championship, he ought to have some connection.
Well, he won F3 last year, so he'll go back to back if he does win it.
I know, it's his first year of Formula 2. Exactly. Whereas some of them, you know, like Richard, sure, he's in his fifth year of Formula 2 and he's currently in fourth place in the championship. It makes me wonder as to how this is going to continue.
It does always make me question mark why an F2 champion wouldn't already have a seat sorted out. He's not spoken about very much.
It doesn't always happen though, does it?
I know, and sometimes if you look at Stoffel Vandoorne, okay, he got the chance, it wasn't so successful, but he was definitely worthy of more time, I thought, in F1. And there's a whole history of people who have been excellent in F2 and then just not quite made the grade. I think Sam Bird was excellent.
I mean, this year was unusual in that we had so many rookies, because the last few years we had hardly any rookies. Mm. And it seems to have gone from nothing to loads. You know, I wish there was always, in a way, I almost wish in the rules that the champion of Formula 2 should get a seat in Formula 1 the following year. I'd love to see that. I mean, it's a hard thing to make happen because all the teams are independent and, you know, it's their decision as to who they're going to have. But it does, then I've seen some great Formula 2 champions never make it to Formula 1. And I really feel for them because they've done a great job at Formula 2, but they don't get that chance sometimes to actually race in Formula 1.
Yeah. And I think, again, Fornaroli, if he goes back to back, he literally cannot be ignored because Bortoletto, Russell, Leclerc, these are like esteemed drivers that have done that. And that's very rare to do. And it's so interesting to me that it must be really difficult to identify drivers, because you look at Behrmann last year in F2, as much as he missed a bunch of running because he was doing a lot of FP1s and filled in for Ferrari at Saudi Arabia, like he didn't finish particularly high. Antonelli wasn't particularly high in the F2 rankings last year. Colapinto, a good example as well. Like I think ultimately he's actually doing a pretty good job relative to Gasly, I would say, numbers wise. And he was having a fairly mediocre F2 season if you looked at the standings. But obviously there's so much more than that to it.
Absolutely. And one thing actually we've got to think about for Formula 2 next year is the American Colton Herta's coming in to do Formula 2 next year.
How brave is that?
Seven years of IndyCar racing he's done. 7 years. He's finished second in that championship quite recently. And he raced against Lando Norris in the junior single-seater championships in the UK in his early career. So the fact that he's trying to go to Formula 1 through Cadillac, but he's going to do a season of Formula 2 first, that's really interesting, isn't it?
I mean, 25 years of age, coming into Formula 2 for the first time, when you've got people like Freddie Slater, young British guy, tromping at the bit. And I would say he will be the next star when it comes to British talent.
I feel that
too. And I think he's being fast-tracked. I hope they don't fast-track him too much, because he is winning everything he touches. He's managed, I believe, by the same people that manage Lando Norris. He's good friends with Lando. So here's my tip for the future. But if you look at Colton, I mean, I just think it's incredibly brave to hang up your helmet as your career in America and come to a totally different series. And we all know that F2 is not easy.
No.
Single-seater racing on the European scene is not easy. I mean, good luck to him.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And he was so unlucky as well. Not unlucky, but Racing Bulls wanted him in the seat a couple of years ago, didn't they? And he couldn't get the super license exemption. And I think it's insane how little IndyCar, it's not an FIA series, so it doesn't get the super license it deserves as a championship, because it is a mature, hyper-competitive championship.
Yeah.
The variety of tracks they race on. Colton Herta is absolutely, he deserves a super license. It's mad. He finished second last year and he still doesn't have one. He doesn't have 40 points, which is crazy to me. And that's why he's having to do F2 and take this route. But, you know, he's we'll see. I mean, Miata won Super Formula and didn't really do anything in F2 last year.
No, it's interesting. Ayumu Iwasa has won Super Formula in Japan. And I noticed his engineer has actually said he thinks he's better than Tsunoda. But of course, we don't think Tsunoda's going to be around anymore. But whether he'll actually get a seat in Formula One, I rather doubt at this stage, I have to say.
Yeah, it's really tough for the guys coming up. And you're right in saying you never know when an F2 driver is going to come through and really impress and when they're going to come through and just simmer and not quite hit the big time. And until you're actually in an F1 car, and I've spoken to lots of F2 drivers who've made the way up to F1, until you're in an F1 car, you can't predict how good you are going to be. You can do all the testing you like, but when you're actually coming to a race against the likes of Alonso, Hamilton, who've got years of experience, and you turn up with your new school kit on the first day, it's anyone's game. Really is.
Okay, well, you're talking about predicting. I've got to get you moving on. I've got to get you moving on and predicting, because we've got to now look at Qatar, because that's what's coming up next. Okay. It's going to be sprint and main race. Any of us, we didn't manage to predict that McLaren would be disqualified from this last race in Las Vegas. So we've got to start thinking about who's going to win in Qatar. How's the championship going to go? It is still open. So there's a bit to talk about here, isn't there?
So much. And I feel like it's really high pressure as well, high stakes, because for us as F1 experts, we should be able to predict this and we should nail it. But actually, this season has been full of things that you would never predict. Max Verstappen coming back to challenge for a championship for his fifth consecutive championship. I never would have predicted that. So it's just open for all sorts of mistakes to be made. So, Tom.
Right, thanks for putting me on the spot, Jenny. I would... look, Qatar is one of those races where track limits are going to be a factor. That's going to hit people in qualifying, absolutely. Those curbs are going to rip some tyres up, I'm sure of it. We've got the mandated two-stop as well. So is that going to maybe play into... Mercedes typically overheat their tyres, but if you're mandated a two-stop, essentially, you can maybe push them a bit further. So they could become a factor. There's a lot of unknowns, and it's a sprint weekend, so one FP1. Like, I'm very excited for this one.
I think you have to work out what your heart is saying and what your head is saying. So what is your head saying and what is your heart saying?
Well, look, last year, Lando obviously got his drive-through penalty for not respecting the yellow flags, but was very, very quick. McLaren, on paper, absolutely should be right up there, surely. However, you know, it only takes a little, you know, dodgy pit stop. The pressure is going to be sky high, right? shall I go predictions?
Hold on to that thought. We'll come back to predictions because I don't want to give the game away for the prediction championship of the world. Okay. I'm going to ask Ben, what do you think is going to happen this weekend? Because that'll inform everybody for their own predictions at home.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I think this does intrigue me because it's been good for McLaren, but it's also been good for Verstappen. And you know, as we know, Verstappen and Piastri are tied in the points and Lando's just ahead of them. So I think all three are going to be crucial there, unless they, of course, all three hit each other, knock each other up, and then somebody else wins. It's not impossible because the pressure is on now. The pressure is definitely on all of them. They've got to deliver. So I think it's going to be a really interesting weekend, yeah.
I hope that Lando keeps it together. And because it's a sprint weekend, the points will change. It's so close when it comes to the top three, as you say, not only on points, but on wins. So countback is going to come into things potentially.
True.
And that's going to be really difficult to work out. So they might all end up with the same amount of wins. and then you have to go back to seconds and thirds in the countback system. It's going to be a very mathematical challenge come the last race, if it goes that far. My hunch is that it will be settled in Qatar. That's only my hunch. I think Lando just needs to outscore both of his rivals and go finish Qatar with 26 points. The gap is 24 points. So to me, that doesn't seem like a big ask, bearing in mind how good, how consistently good he's been being in the last few races. So I I think it could be done this weekend.
Not a big ask, just easy.
Well, we better get into prediction. Artwork.
Yes, okay. Because I don't have to make a prediction. That's the great thing about this. So it's all on you guys.
Conscientious objector.
Right, it is time for the Predictions Championship of the World. The rules of the Prediction Championship. Quite fiendishly difficult, actually, or simple, depending on which way you want to look at it. Pick a winner. You receive 6 points. 4 points for second, 2 points for third place, and 1 point for fastest lap. Ben, producer Jim, our esteemed guest, and myself all get to guess. But I'm not doing it because Nicola, of course, is the presenter, so she gets to choose still. She sent us a video, so don't worry. I won't put any bad luck on this. So, 22 races into our Championship of the World. Let's take a look at the standings. Producer Jim, 75 points, but
well done, Jim.
Big fat zero from last weekend.
All fixed.
Team Guest, no pressure. You're trailing by 2 points. You're on 73 after, again, Rachel Brooks did an amazing job and then all her drivers were kicked out, so she didn't score. Nicola on 72 points. Look how close it is. She got 6 points for Max, obviously. And Ben, 65 points, 6 points for Max. And you're within touching distance.
Touching, yes.
Come on, you've got this. I'm cheering you on. I'm also cheering you on. I'm cheering you on. Right, give us some thoughts.
Okay, my predictions. All right, for what's going to happen in Qatar. It is very difficult to say, but I'm actually going to go for Max for taking the win because he's just in such top form at the moment. I'm going to go for Piastri second ahead of Norris, actually, on this one. And we are talking about the main race. We're not talking about the sprint race, remember. This is for the main race. It could be different in the sprint race, but that's what I'm going for. And I'm going to go fastest lap. Actually, I'll go for something a bit different. I'm going to go for Russell for fastest lap.
Okay, so you're hedging it all on Russell, basically. I love that. Team Guest.
Okay, so race winner, Lando Norris.
Fair enough.
He wins the title. Mm-hmm. Ahead of, I'm going to say, because I think Max and Oscar are going to, they're going to feel like they're going to have to stretch and maybe extend beyond themselves. So I'm actually going to say George Russell P2, Max Verstappen P3.
Yeah, interesting.
Fastest lap. I'm going to go Lando Norris as well.
Okay.
I think he's going to get it done.
Fair play.
In a big way.
Right, let's find out what Nicola is predicting this weekend for Qatar.
Max P1, because that's only the right thing to say, isn't it? And that's not because I have a contract with Red Bull, that's because he will win. And then I'm going to go P2, George Russell, because I feel like he's going to be up there and he's kind of messing things around a little bit for McLaren. And then I'm going to go Lando P3, because I think Oscar's just completely dropped off, hasn't he? So I'm going Lando P3, and then I'm going to go fastest lap to Max Verstappen.
I'm so surprised. I'm sure we all are. Right, producer Jim, what are your predictions?
Okay, I think Lando's going to do it. So Lando first, Oscar second, Max third, and Lando fastest lap, slam dunk world champion.
Oh dear. Producer Jim, this is very bad. That's what I would have predicted. So I fear. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens. And we need to do a shout out to Metal Reporters. You've lots of S's on YouTube. Got Russell and Antonelli correct, but none of you lot got the top three this week. Disqualifications, I'm sure, played a part in that. But make sure you subscribe and you can make your own predictions and maybe even get a shout out, especially if you've got lots of S's in your name. So, Tomo, thank you so much for coming on. But before we let you go, we want you to, what is tradition, give us a bit of a story or something that make us laugh on the Midweek F1 podcast. So a fun fact or something you think you can leave us.
Okay, so I have a story involving my wife and Nick DeVries, which I think is very funny. Don't get ahead of yourself. So, Silverstone, I want to say 2023, was that the season he was in? Yeah, and his final qualifying in F1, because he was dropped after that Grand Prix, he'd just gone out in Q1, and I'd managed to get an invite to the race. I was in Red Bull Hospitality, actually, with my wife as a plus one, and we sat there Q1's ended, and we kind of sat around, mooching around, watching Q2. And all of a sudden, Nick de Vries starts to approach us because, of course, the Red Bull drivers, well, the VCARB and Red Bull drivers all stay in the same hospitality. And he's just been knocked out of Q1. You know, his mood's going to be down. You know, it's been a difficult season to that point. So I'm just, you know. And then Hannah sees him, my wife, and locks eyes and just gives it jazz hands to Nick de Vries after he's been knocked out. And his final, that's, I'm sure he remembers it because I saw his face. And he did actually give a little wry smile, which I was like, fair play. There was a lot, there's not many things that would have brought a smile out of that boy that day. But my wife was one of them, so well done, Hannah.
I think we have to do that in response. The jazz to that,
hands,
don't we?
Yeah, some jazz the jazz. Hands. I couldn't. And then about 5 minutes later, Checo was walking along because he went out in Q1 as well. And I was like, Hannah, no, do not keep those hands under your bum. We're not doing that again. So well, that is my story.
That's a lovely story, Tom. It's been lovely having you with us. And
thank you very much for having
your
me.
Insight into Formula One is really, really good. Thank
appreciate
you so
it.
Much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, that's it for this week. Join us next week when we'll be looking back, obviously, at what went down in Qatar. And we'll be looking forward to the final round, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix.
And don't forget to hit the bell and subscribe so you don't miss a single thing when it comes to this podcast, even little bits we put out in between. Nicola, you'll be pleased to know we'll be back in the hot seat next weekend when it comes to Qatar. Thank you both so much, and to producer Jim, and we'll see you next week. Take care.